Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery, and I'm excited to share with you that we've created a new series. This is a topical series where we've taken previously recorded clips, compiled them by topic, idea, and particular concepts within the infinite banking footprint and the financial world broadly. Topics will include loans, loan repayments, paid up additions riders, other riders, dividends, long-term thinking, what could go wrong, what does go wrong within the infinite banking footprint. And I hope you enjoy listening. And it was created for your edification. Thank you. Banking truly is a process. It is not a product. Whenever you can or wish to control as many of the aspects of the banking function as possible, then you would be inclined, I believe, to use dividend paying whole life insurance, right? Issued by a mutual company. In my humble opinion, after 33 years of the financial world, 20 years practicing the infinite banking concept, personally and professionally, that there's no better product to practice the infinite banking concept with. Now, that's not to say that, like I mentioned earlier, you can't, you know, bank with various things. You can bank with, you know, I can bank with farm equipment. I can bank with cows, right? And so can you. Okay. I listened to another episode that someone sent, and I don't know if it was on YouTube, Shorts, I don't know the social media terminology, you know, forgive me, I'm a boomer, right? But this young man was all excited about the infinite banking concept, promoting a mutual company and promoting the benefits of index universal life, you know, which is, you know, properly classified. The young man doesn't really understand life insurance and doesn't understand the infinite banking concept. And he sure doesn't understand, you know, any of the writings that Nelson wrote concerning the infinite banking concept and index universal life. You know, but then you say, you know, like in this example, I want to bring it up because it struck me when I listened to it, you know, well, the index, you know, you can't lose money, can only go up. Well, and then he talks about uncapped strategies. Well, the contract allows them to reduce the caps dang near to nothing. All right. Oh, and the cost of insurance continues to go up. Oh, yeah. And he's, you know, promoting the idea of an index universal life policy issued by a mutual company. Well, just think that through. The index universal life doesn't earn dividends. They do not participate in the financial experience of the life insurance company, which is exactly what a dividend is. Okay. So you have a mutual company that you're using or promoting index universal life. Now, you got to understand, young man, that all of the whole life policy owners of that company are going to profit from your activity. Right, your activity promoting the index universal life, it's a mutual company. You're directly supporting the profitability of that company because the index universal life policy is probably, it is the most profitable product of a life insurance company by volume, right? And so who's going to receive those profits of your universal life activity? It'll be the mutual policy owners that own whole life insurance through that mutual company. You're supporting directly the profitability of the insurance company, which IUL does very well. And who's going to benefit from that? The whole life policy owners of that mutual company. So I know I probably shouldn't have gone off on that, but, you know, just seen it yesterday or over the weekend. So I'm still thankful that the financial industry has not been taken over by Uncle Guido. Right. They have not nationalized the financial services industry. Oh, and they would like to. No, they've thrown up trial balloons. And I believe that it's a matter of time. You know, well, just look at the healthcare industry that we have. You know, why is your healthcare insurance so high? It's not because of the mean, evil insurance companies. And I'm not saying they're pure as a driven snow at all. No, it's like the same as education and welfare. The problem is Uncle Guido got involved with all of those, right? So today, these mutual companies are privately owned companies. They are owned by the policyholders. They're not owned by shareholders, right? So there's a modicum of, you know, free enterprise. It's a beautiful thing, which I'm very thankful for as well. The free enterprise that we have left today, I'm talking about the free enterprise that our founding fathers wrote about and had envisioned. I'm not talking about the mercantilism that we have today. I'm not talking about all this crony capitalism that what's going on in today's big wide world. I'm talking about the free enterprise between free people. You know, I'm thankful that that still exists. I'm also very thankful that mutual companies still exist. As always, another informative episode. You mention a time when it is quote unquote too late to get out of an IUL. When is that? I sought out a whole life policy for use in IBC and was sold both a whole life and an IUL policy, an indexed universal life policy. The more I'm learning about IULs, combined with very disappointing returns that I've seen already in just the first few years, this has me very concerned. Is there even an avenue that exists to get out of one of these and convert it to a whole life without taking a major loss? You know, we can talk all day about index universal life insurance policies. You're going to take a loss on an IUL. They have a surrender charge built in, a surrender charge period, 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, 12 years, or whatever it is. And unless your account value rises above the surrender charge, you're going to walk away with some kind of a loss. Is there a mechanism in place to get out of those? You can do what is called a 1035 exchange in the life insurance industry. You can exchange one life insurance policy to another life insurance policy. You know, it's akin to a 1031 exchange in real estate. Now, there are consequences to doing that. You should know what you're doing and what your the ramifications of a 1035 exchange are before you do that. But yes, there is a way to transfer values tax neutral and your basis transfers through a 1035 exchange. But you need to work with a competent advisor and agent before you do that. In this question, Carlos asks, and the problem with universal life or for infinite banking. That's the video that was released some time ago. And the question is, you know, could you do a podcast covering a particular life insurance company and their balance sheet rider in their indexed universal life policies? So that terminology, you may figure out who I'm talking about. He goes on, an agent is trying to tell me that infinite banking works with those types of policies, and that the cost of insurance won't eat up all my money. Please and thank you. Well, thank you for listening, Carlos. I think that question has been released for some time. I don't know that I've ever directly answered it, other than I have shot or recorded and released a couple of shorter videos regarding universal life. And that is a larger work that is on our agenda to complete. We just haven't done it yet. And it's not because we're lazy and not don't want to do it or not working. We're working hard. We're working like Hebrew slaves without straw. Okay. So I appreciate your patience. All right. And so to answer that question here is, I don't want to do a podcast on a particular life insurance company. You know, I go out of my way not to mention life insurance companies by name because I do not want to promote a life insurance company. I want to promote the idea and the very fact that you can become your own banker with the infinite banking concept at the UME level. That's what I'm promoting. Education. Okay. Now, whatever they call their rider that accumulates cash, it's a PUA rider with whole life insurance, and they all have different names, or the life insurance companies name their riders differently. The problem here is, and that's a great company, they also write whole life. This particular company that you mentioned writes whole life insurance and they write universal life. Their particular Well, let me say their universal life policies illustrate the very best. So the agents are promoting universal life based on the illustration, right? Can you create an account value? Yes. You can borrow against anything. So if you have an account value in a universal life policy, you can borrow against it. Once you have a value above your surrender charge, all right, let's don't jump over that. The problem with universal life, whether the agent wants to recognize it or not, is the life insurance company retains the right to increase the cost of insurance. And the cost of insurance, the cost of the death benefit is COI. When you get your annual statement on the universal life policy, you'll see the values, you'll see the premium paid, you'll see a loan balance if you have one, you'll see the account value, you'll see the surrender charge, you'll see the surrender value if there is one, and you'll see the total death benefit, and you will see the cost of insurance. And it goes up every year that you're alive. It must. Why? Because you're getting 1 year closer to mortality. It is not a matter of when you graduate or if you're going to graduate. It's a matter of when. We are all going to graduate, right? So the longer I live, the higher the cost of that insurance is on a universal life policy. And then you're put into one or two positions. Number one, reducing the death benefit, all right, to lessen the cost of insurance and or increasing the premium. Period. So the problem is by design of the universal life. It is not whether you can collateralize an account value or not. So, of course, the agent, you know, he's comfortable. They're comfortable with that. They want to get paid. And, you know, they probably think they're doing the right thing. I don't know. So I hope that answers your question. If you want to practice, let me be very clear and very direct. If you want to practice the infinite banking concept correctly, efficiently, and in a way that will serve you well over your lifetime, right, you should work with a qualified practitioner, in my opinion, from the Nelson Nash Institute, right, a certified or recognized practitioner, someone who knows themselves, they do it themselves, and they understand what Nelson's work was and is, right? And you want to work with a dividend-paying whole life insurance policy. That's what you want to own. And they're issued by mutual companies. When you buy that policy, you become an owner of the company, okay? All right. Now, going back to this, like I said earlier, that company also has whole life insurance policies available. Why they're doing the universal life. It seems like universal life is getting having a resurgence of popularity. And I have my opinions. You know, I think that stock companies really write, that's all they can write. They can't write a mutual policy, right? Because they're stock companies. So there's a lot of annuity sellers and promoters that want to write life insurance, and what's available to them through their carriers is universal life. Okay. And then this question or there's an individual, V, answering that question that Carlos asked and I just answered. And his question is, this company has high early cash value rider. No kidding. I think I answered that. It is not a matter of the cash value that you can collateralize. The issue, the problem, as I see it with universal life, is by design. There is a design flaw in the policy. You can't correct it. Now, actuarially, it sounds right, but you can practice the infinite banking concept much more efficiently, with much more control, with a lot more guarantees. The only thing that you have is a guarantee in a universal life policy is that you've got to pay that premium. The risk of that policy paying a universal life policy, paying a death benefit, is on you. You are assuming the risk of that policy being in force. That violates the very spirit, the very essence of insurance. If I buy insurance on my car, my home, or anything, I'm transferring that risk of loss to the insurer, and I'm paying for that privilege. with a universal life policy, I'm paying a premium to have a death benefit. That risk of having a death benefit in force if my natural mortality is transferred back to me. And I know a lot of agents listen to this, and some of you love us. Thank you. I love you too. Some of you don't like us. That's okay. Educate yourself, sir, madam, before you lead your unsuspecting clients into something that may not serve them well. All right. I digress. Then V replies to that question with another reply. And he says, or they say, you have to understand the net amount of risk. The gap between the death benefit and the cash value shrinks over the years. So the term amount goes down. And then James Nethery, are you familiar with the net amount of risk? Thanks, V. Yes, I am. That's a very, very, very old concept. So the net amount of risk is, and it doesn't matter if it's universal life, any type of a cash accumulating life insurance policy. There absolutely is a net amount of risk. So if I have a policy with $1 million in death benefit and I have a $500,000 cash value with whole life or a $500,000 account value with universal life, the net amount of risk is the difference, $500,000, the difference between the cash value and the death benefit. So yes, V, I am very familiar with that. So the implication of his question or their question is because that, so if I buy a policy today for $1 million and there's no cash value or account value, then the company assumes a risk for the whole 1 million. Yes, they do. Now, as the account value grows in universal life, the net amount of risk shrinks. Yeah. So the implication is the cost of the insurance goes down. Now, you need to reread your contract, sir or madam. Okay, you would think that, yeah, the cost of insurance wouldn't cannibalize that universal life policy because the net amount of risk is shrinking. Yeah. It's true, the net amount at risk is shrinking. It is also true that the cost of insurance is going to go up, and the potential of cannibalizing that policy is great. I have yet to see a case, all right, where a universal life policy performs as illustrated, number one. Okay. I wonder why the National Association of Insurance Commissioners several years ago limited the rate of return that could be illustrated in a universal life illustration. Wonder why. And then the reply from the life insurance industry is, well, we'll use some factors, multiplying factors to get around that so they can illustrate even better some, you know, some bonuses in the future and different things. Okay. And then, let me go back to the, I've yet to see a case, and I haven't seen every case. I'm not saying that. I don't know everything, right? I've yet to see a case where a universal life policy provided a tax-free income and a legitimate death benefit, all right, as illustrated. Yeah, it's just not going to happen. Could it happen? Yeah, hell, there could be life on Mars too, right? I don't know. Could it happen? Yeah, it could happen. Possible? Possible. Probable? Yeah, no. Okay. I don't want to get sidetracked. These are beautiful questions, and I appreciate the opportunity to listen to them or to answer to them, read them, and answer them. So if you have a universal life policy, I'm not saying go cancel that or replace that, but you should know what you have. You should know what you own. So you should be educated on what you have. And I don't care what you own. You know, you want to learn how to manage your assets. Look, universal life is an asset, maybe misplaced, right? Maybe you could do better. And if you can do better, you would want to know you could do better. This question, is it possible with my policy to have the premium end at the end of the seventh year, although allowing me to continue to pay into it at my leisure without commitment? Is it possible to eliminate the minimum premiums and keep paying premiums? Kind of two questions. So all whole life insurance, not universal life, not indexed universal life, variable universal life, or just plain vanilla universal life, whole life insurance has the ability to elect what's called a reduced paid up. That's a non-forfeiture option. So typically there has to be enough cash value, or there has to be enough cash value for this to occur anyway, but reduced paid up can't occur until the end of the seventh year. So the short answer should be yes, if there's enough cash value, you can elect that. However, that wouldn't, you know, RPU, reduced paid up, is permanent. You can't undo that. So your question is, at the end of the seventh year, can your premium be reduced, allowing you to continue paying premiums at your leisure without a commitment? So if there's enough cash value in your policy, you can surrender cash value to pay a premium. Premium offset paid from policy values, and that is not permanent. But then you run up against the requirements of a life insurance company. There are minimum requirements to all of your riders. So if you don't pay the minimum rider premium, typically those riders fall off, and either you can't put them back on or you have to go through underwriting to put them back on. So this is another, not a clear cut yes or no question. It's possible. It depends on your policy, the structure, and the cash values, and then how that would work. You know, so could I, in the end of the seventh year, reduce my premium all down to the minimums? Yes. And then have the policy value surrendered to pay those? Yes. Some companies may require me to send in an additional check in addition, you know, to those surrenders to pay a particular rider. Other companies, as soon as I lower the PUA premium, you know, I have a limited amount of time before I can even continue paying that PUA premium, a limited amount of flexibility. If I don't pay that minimum required, you know, PUA premium in most companies, it's going to go away or be greatly reduced. And some are worse than others. And this is one area that you, if you're an agent or advisor, you need to be keenly aware of what the companies that you represent allow. Okay. All right. Thanks for asking that question.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.